This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. About 90 minutes ago, Senators Corker and McCaskill introduced major legislation to set a permanent binding spending cap on total federal spending of 20.6% of the gross domestic product. This is not just any other piece of legislation. This is a piece of legislation that would have profound effects, requiring sweeping, radical changes, and as you'll hear in a moment, draconian effects. The center within the past hour has released a major analysis of this proposal, building on earlier work we've done over the years. You should have it, and it's now up on our website. Here with me are Paul Van de Water, the principal author of the paper, and Jim Horney, director of federal fiscal policy at the center, both two of Washington's leading budget experts who between them had 25 years of experience in senior positions at the Congressional Budget Office. We're going to hear first from Paul Van de Water, who's going to explain the proposal and its effects. I will then add a few comments after Paul is done, and at that point, we will go straight to your questions. Paul Van de Water.
Thanks. Thanks, Bob. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that federal spending this year will total 24.7% of the economy, or gross domestic product. This ratio is artificially high due to the recession, which has boosted federal spending and shrunk GDP. As the economy recovers, the ratio of spending to GDP will fall, but only modestly. CBO projects that under current policies, federal spending will average 23.4% of GDP over the next decade and will equal 24% in 2021. In face of these projections, and as you know, Senators Bob Corker, Claire McCaskill, and several co-sponsors have introduced legislation to limit total federal spending to 20.6% of GDP, its average from 1970 through 2008. This proposed limit would be enforced by automatic across-the-board spending cuts. The problem is that the historical spending average is not a reasonable target for the future, and limiting spending to this amount would cause serious problems. It would require draconian cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and a wide range of federal programs, and it would greatly impair the nation's ability to respond to recessions. In the paper that we have released today, I examine the forces driving federal spending. It shows how the Corker-McCaskill proposal fails to account for fundamental changes in society and government, which include the aging of the population, substantial increases in healthcare costs, and new federal responsibilities in areas such as homeland security, veterans health care, and prescription drug coverage for seniors. These factors make the spending levels of the past inappropriate for today. I want to cite four reasons why aiming for the historical average makes no sense. First, economic and demographic developments will raise the cost of meeting long-standing federal commitments for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Over the next 25 years, the share of the population aged 65 and over will grow by half, from 13% in 2010 to 20% in 2035. As a result, Social Security spending will grow by 1.3% of GDP over that period and then level off. Medicare spending will rise even more by about 1.9% of GDP because it is affected not only by the aging of the population, but also by the continuing rise in healthcare costs. Second, the federal government's responsibilities have grown significantly in recent years. Just since 2000, for example, spending for Homeland Security in the wake of 9/11 has increased by 0.3% of GDP. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have increased the number of wounded veterans needing health care and income support, and have increased spending for veterans benefits by 0.4% of GDP. The Medicare prescription drug benefit enacted in 2003 adds 0.3% of GDP to federal spending in 2010 and more in later years. Last year's health reform legislation will slow the growth of national health spending and reduce the federal budget deficit, but it will also increase federal spending by about 0.4% of GDP when it is fully phased in. Third, spending for interest on the federal government's debt will be substantially higher in coming years. Over the past decade, largely due to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the large Bush-era tax cuts, and the severe recession, debt held by the public has almost doubled as a share of GDP. As interest rates return to more typical levels, federal spending on interest will increase commensurately. Simply put, aiming to limit spending to the recent historical average of 20.6% of GDP might be appropriate for the years ahead if the age distribution of the population remained the same as it was in previous decades, if healthcare costs grew no faster than the economy, if Medicare had no drug benefit, if we were willing to leave more than 30 million Americans without health coverage, if there were no terrorist threats and hence no need for homeland security spending, if no wounded veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan needed medical care and income support, and if decisions and events over the last decade had not nearly doubled the national debt as a share of GDP. But that's not the world in which we live, and it's not the target at which we should aim. The deficit reduction plan recently proposed by former Clinton Budget Director Alice Rivlin and former Republican Senate Budget Committee Chairman Pete Domenici illustrates my point. The Rivlin-Domenici proposal accepts the reality that the world and federal responsibilities have changed and that we can't meet national needs in coming decades and hold spending to the level deemed appropriate in the past. It proposes major program changes to reduce spending, some of which are quite severe, but it accepts that total federal spending will have to exceed 20.6% of GDP in the decades ahead. Under the Rivlin-Domenici plan, total spending will equal approximately 23% of GDP in 2020 and rise to somewhat higher levels in later years. Fourth and finally, any arbitrary limit on federal spending would tend to deepen economic recessions and make recovery from a recession more difficult. Spending for some important federal programs, including unemployment insurance, Social Security, Medicaid, and food stamps, rises automatically during a recession when the need for assistance grows. Since GDP also shrinks during a recession and remains below its trend level during the early stages of recovery, federal spending rises as a share of GDP during periods of economic weakness. This automatic response softens the recession's blow, not only for the program's beneficiaries, but also for the economy as a whole by maintaining total purchasing power. Attempting to limit federal spending to a fixed share of GDP year in, year out would, quote, impinge on the stabilizers on the spending side of the budget, unquote, as CBO Director Douglas Elmendorf has recently testified. Taking away these stabilizers, Elmendorf states, and I quote again, risks making the economy less stable and risks exacerbating the swings in the business cycle, end quote. Although provision could be made to allow waiving the spending limit during a recession and its aftermath, the economy could weaken substantially while waiting for Congress to act, even if the necessary action is eventually forthcoming. The bottom line is that arbitrary numerical targets for federal spending are misguided. Determining the appropriate levels of federal spending and revenues requires making a thoughtful assessment of national needs and weighing the benefits of federal spending programs and tax expenditures against each other and against the cost of the taxes to pay for them. Limiting spending to its historical average as Senators Corker and McCaskill propose, would prevent these trade-offs and require deep cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and other vital programs.
Thank you, Paul. A few additional comments before we go to your questions. An expert committee on the deficit convened by the National Academy of Sciences and the National Academy of Public Administration issued a major report early last year. It outlined four possible paths to stabilize the debt. As the co-chair of that panel, former CBO Director Rudolph Penner, explained, the National Academy of Sciences panel designed budget paths at two extremes. Those were Rudy Penner's words, extremes. One that achieved nearly all of its deficit reduction by cutting programs, and another that got nearly all of its deficit reduction by raising taxes. And the panel also designed two intermediate paths that blended program and tax changes. Here's why I'm bringing this up. The extreme low spending path, the path that got nearly all of its deficit reduction by cutting programs while doing very little on the revenue side of the budget, despite the presence of over $1 trillion a year in special interest tax breaks and other tax expenditures, that extreme low spending path included very deep cuts in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and reductions of about 20% in all other spending, including defense, veterans programs, and the like. Under that extreme path, federal spending would be slightly higher than under the Corker-McCaskill level. It would have been 21% of GDP. As the National Academy of Sciences study indicates, a proposal to limit total federal spending to 20.6% of GDP would essentially establish as a policy of the United States that programs on the spending side of the budget, no matter how effective or meritorious, must be accorded lower priority and made subject to the budget knife, while the $1 trillion a year in tax expenditures are given much greater protection. Last summer, conservative economist Martin Feldstein, chair of President Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors, wrote in the Wall Street Journal that tax expenditures are the single best place in the budget to cut wasteful or unnecessary spending. But the Corker-McCaskill proposal ignores Marty's advice. Under the Corker-McCaskill bill, it would become difficult or impossible to finance a badly needed program expenditure by closing an egregious special interest tax loophole. And talking about Ronald Reagan, columnist Matt Miller noted in something he wrote a few months ago that federal spending under Reagan averaged 22% of GDP at a time when no baby boomers were retired and healthcare costs were more than one-third lower as a share of the economy than they are today. As a matter of math, Matt wrote, if you run the government at a smaller level than did Ronald Reagan while accommodating this massive increase in the number of seniors on our health and pension programs, you have to decimate the rest of the budget. Now, we all know that budget and other issues are complicated, and sometimes members of Congress introduce legislation without fully understanding the effects. This appears to be one of those cases, at least on the part of Senator McCaskill. In her statement on the floor today, Senator McCaskill ridiculed the severe effects of a Republican study committee budget plan unveiled last week. She clearly didn't understand that her plan with Senator Corker would over time require deeper, more draconian cuts than the Republican study committee plan she dismissed. One final point before we go to your questions. So we've been talking here about the Corker-McCaskill proposal. That proposal, in a sense, is a variation on a theme. There are some other proposals that have a similar theme, and that could be even more dangerous. Last week, a number of senators, led by Senators Hatch and Cornyn, introduced a proposal that, among other things, would write a spending limit of 20% of GDP into the U.S. Constitution. Now, it would cause all of the same problems that the Corker-McCaskill proposal would cause that Paul Vandewater so ably outlined. But in addition to this, by virtue of enshrining that limit in the Constitution, it would make it far more difficult to remove it, to revisit it, if it had the kind of disastrous effects that we would expect. Let me end by noting that what all of these variations on a theme, whether it is the Corker-McCaskill version or the constitutional amendment version, have in common is that despite their posture of making tough choices, they're look ma no hands proposals. They have no specifics. There's no specific change in these proposals in Social Security or Medicare or veterans programs or anything else. But make no mistake about it, as we've been explaining, they would lead to enormous changes affecting nearly all Americans and matters that people care deeply about. These proposals, however, with their utter lack of specifics and antiseptic-sounding percentage of GDP limits, mask their actual effects, which likely is one of their purposes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.